This is Mathematics After Hours.
Oh, hi. Here I am, tea in hand, Rack Addicts Towers, for the Rack Addicts After Hours podcast. It's about music and technology. Welcome, I hope you're in the right place. It is episode 181, and yes, Pete, I did check. We must begin with our weekly update. First, Pete, what have you been a-doing?
Well, I can announce the start of Rack Addicts Recordings.
Oh my, what be that?
Well, it will be our own record label.
Awesome.
And the first release will be the 21st of July, and I can tell all our listeners more about it at that time.
Secretive for now.
Well, for that release, but I can talk about the record label. Yeah, anyway, it's something we've been meaning to do for a number of years, and the usual procrastination and other factors has kicked in, but now we've kicked it out, and it's there. But it has to be a big thumbs up to Mark and his partner, Debrina. They've done all the admin and all the nitty-gritty and got it all together and made it happen.
Nice one.
So I'm pretty excited about it all.
So what's the intent, apart from releasing actual Rack Addicts material?
Primarily releasing Rack Addicts material, which we've got a bit of an archive and anything going forward. So obviously the attempt will be to release one track a month, possibly.
Nice.
The main thing that Cygnus, who is the publishing company, so I've had a publishing contract with them for a number of years, but when we first presented a lot of this material some years ago, they said it was too commercial.
How rude.
Yes, they were particularly focused on just drum and bass. Now they've widened their portfolio, so they're very happy
good stuff
to handle it. So that's going to be the particular track that we're releasing is going to be a Beatport and Spotify exclusive for
awesome.
2 weeks, and then it'll go out on general release after that.
Nice.
So yes, it's just interesting to go back through some of this archival stuff and these half-finished projects and go, oh, that was a good one. That should finish that one and get this one done.
Wrap it up and do the completion phase.
And also, I've been having that conversation with Mark about how far you take stuff. You know, when is it good enough?
Yeah. How do you know when to stop?
Yeah, I think that's the art, because it's so easy to just keep working and overworking and nothing.
Such is the allure or anything with lure in it. What was the word I was looking for? Something, something, digital. Too many options. I don't know.
Something, something, digital. Too many options. Yeah, so I'm thrilled that some of this music is going to be available and out to the general public. And yeah, I'm not expecting anything earth-shattering in the respect of number of sales, but at least it'll be getting out there. And then, I don't know if we spoke about it last week, I'll be sort of thinking about how it can be translated into a live performance.
Yeah, I'm particularly excited about that.
So it'll be the task of moving various things from doors into sequencers and drum machines and samplers and that type of thing.
And of course, the offer is always there. If you need a safe test bed performance situation, ModCaf is there for trying these things out.
Well, I've been thinking that, and I've also been thinking about the Westie as well, that particular space, because, I mean, what would you say? You could get 200 people in there? Well,
actually, I think Barney was saying the other day you can actually get more, like 300 in that room.
Really?
Which sounds wild, but yeah, it's not a bad space.
So possibly, if it's convenient, and if Mark is in the UK at a suitable time at the end of the year and we can get it together, or soon after, possibly we could look at doing, I don't know, putting something together for about an hour set and see if we can get some other acts in there.
Well, yeah, there'd be oodles of people to choose from in the ModCaf should you choose pull from that pool.
But it certainly will be demonstrating sort of one-offs and individual tracks at the ModCaf on occasions.
Awesome.
Sort of just for the technical experience and for audience response and all that type of thing.
Definitely. Well, sign me up for that first gig. I'm going to be there whenever, wherever it is.
Excellent.
Nice one. The only article from my week worth reporting is my partner's first triathlon, which was quite exciting. Olympic distance, which is, I think, 1.5 kilometres swim, 40-something kilometre bike, and then a 10K run.
That's quite a sizable amount of exercise.
Yeah, not my idea of fun. She did a 3 hours, 9 minute, which I think is awesome. And actually, it was quite watchable because this was at the Olympic Lake, the Dorney Lake, and there were lots of laps, so you could see them go past loads of times. So it was good fun. I did get sunburnt, but you know, whatever. And I did see a lot of expensive bikes, which I really enjoyed as well. You know, pushing the £10,000 kind of envelope.
Ooh, very special.
And very weirdly shaped. So that was super cool.
And how does she fare in the running, so to speak?
I think kind of a really solid mid-pack, which for a first go around, I think is a pretty good achievement.
Certainly. How big a field?
So in the women's Olympic thing, I think there were about 40 or 50 and she was 20 something.
Okay.
It's pretty good.
Certainly. And then there'll be people in there that will be a lot more experienced, I would imagine.
Yeah. Well, we saw some GBR kit running around. They're obviously top of the pack, but there were some very fit people doing their stuff.
She was performing against some elite athletes.
Indeed. I think she has got the bug. So, and thankfully, cycling, she felt, was the weakest part of the performance. So, oh no, we've got to go on a lot more bike rides together. What a shame.
Good that you've got a shared interest.
Yeah, I didn't expect it to ever happen, but there we are.
Excellent.
Another small project that I have embarked upon, adding to my list of things that I start and then never finish, or kind of come back to years after starting them in the first place, is locating the model, year, style, name, and all of those things of my dad's first proper bike, because it's sort of become the stuff of legend in the, I don't know, the stories that he used to tell. Like, oh yes, I did my rounds on the bone shaker for the butcher when I was a wee lad. And he saved up piece by piece for his Raleigh road bike. And in my head, it's just been this mystical beast of a bike. And now that I'm interested in bikes, I can't stop thinking about it. Anyway, he found a picture of it, and I had to do some detective work. And I have deduced, with the help of some kind people on Reddit, that it is a Raleigh Rapide from the 70s at some point. So I have my saved searches going on eBay and Gumtree to see if I can potentially find one to make a little restoration project out of, because that'd be nice.
And was there anything special about it, did it?
No.
No Reynolds tubing or anything like that?
I think all Raleighs were at that particular time. It was definitely a big Reynolds brand, I think. Everybody probably did at that point, you know, buying English steel.
Quite possibly. I have a Holdsworthy in the loft.
I have not heard of Holdsworthy.
And it's nearly 40 years old.
Does it go?
Most probably if it was put together, yes, it would.
Yeah. Is it in bits?
It's all together other than the wheels. I had the wheels re-rimmed with wobbler. Is it wobbler? No. Is it wobbler rims? I don't know. Very thin rims. I don't think I had it all. I worked on it and improved it. I bought it from, was it Evans? At those times, how long's Evans been going?
Evans is still going.
I know.
So I've no idea when they started.
But this is mid-80s.
Right.
And I used to do a lot of miles on it. In fact, it adorned the wall of my first house. I had it as a wall ornament for many years. I mostly got some photographs of the old, above the sofa.
That's the closest I've found on eBay so far. But for a bit of a steep £170, this one's
Yeah, some
running.
Of these old classic bikes seem to go for quite a lot of money.
Yeah, I don't think this one really counts as a classic, but it is old and it is Raleigh, and people do like Raleigh.
It's just strange how these things from the past, which weren't considered particularly valuable at the time,
they all keep coming back.
Well, and also really seem to attribute a lot more value nowadays. People seem to, you know, the collecting thing starts coming in, or the nostalgia.
Yeah, they come back, and then I also follow on the hype train just after it's got really expensive. That seems to always happen to me.
So you're familiar with the Raleigh Chopper?
Oh yeah, they reintroduced it a couple of weeks ago.
Really?
Yeah, let me show you the new one. I think legally they had to change the design a bit because of modern safety standards, but it looks pretty similar.
Yeah, they were lethal.
Yeah,
and they were really hard work to cycle because of the ergonomics.
Yuck, I can imagine. They look awful.
Style over content for sure.
Yeah,
I had a high back one.
Oh yeah.
Yeah,
you get the 2023 Chopper. There it is, classic.
Still has the similar lines. So what have they done to it to make it safer?
Yeah, let's see if we can find out. What's the same? Whatever. What's different? Different welding techniques, thicker dropouts because of modern testing standards. That's where the wheels kind of sit in at the fork and the rear. Modern brakes. I don't know what they would have been originally. Did it have brakes?
Yeah, it would have had side pull.
A what?
Side pull brakes.
Oh, you mean like the rim brakes that they sort of have the bit on the top?
Yeah, but the way the brake, one part of the brake is fixed and then it pulls
the other one.
Yeah, pulls the other one. Tends to
instead of the symmetrical squeeze.
Which is centre pull.
Oh, got it. Right. Not familiar with the rim brake nomenclature.
No, so many bikes nowadays have disc brakes, don't they?
Yeah. Not that many modern rim brake bikes being made. Unless you're in the super low end anyway. Square taper bottom bracket instead of a cotter pin bottom bracket, whatever that is. Head badge is no longer riveted to the frame.
Yeah, it should be painted on, won't it?
Who knows?
Does it still have the gear changer, which is like on a car? It actually had a gear changer on the crossbar.
It does still have that. There is a different mechanism in there, apparently. Both the bar and the saddle are slightly lower than the original, so they don't have that super tall thing. Again, that's a modern safety standards issue. Aftermarket options, different grips, shifter cover, chain guards, rims, saddles, kickstands, rear carriers, mud guards.
And they are all options.
Those are options.
You've got everything, all those things on the original.
Yeah, no chain guard on the standard version if you buy it now.
Ah, bit of naked upselling there.
Yeah, what a stupid looking thing. Wild.
Oh, well, if it really catches on, people will buy it.
Most likely.
It'll be grandparents as well buying it for children.
Yeah, they'll just be confused.
Considering how long ago it was. Mm. So it was 1970s.
Yes. Strange machine. To the news. There are a few articles of interest. And the first one, which I am currently 80% sure is a real serious thing that one can buy. A Eurorack module by the brand Nervous Squirrel, which is kind of fun, and it is called Awesome Volts, and the awesome is spelt O-R-E hyphen S-O-M-E. A Eurorack synthesizer module that generates truly random control voltages, gates, and triggers. Radioactive events from a jar filled with uranium ore can be used to control compositional parameters.
Interesting.
Yes, that is a Eurorack module with a little glass tube with uranium in it.
What happens if you break the tube?
The maker advises you not to. Or it handle the material or inhale the dust. So there is a Geiger counter in here. Obviously, that's how it's doing its thing.
Mm. I'm not sure if I would like something like that around the house.
No, supposedly the activity of the ore is sufficiently not bad to not mess you up, according to this one person online. Very suspicious.
I expect after watching more episodes of Radioactive Drew that I recommended a few weeks ago on the podcast in the multimedia recommendations section, that some of this stuff isn't too bad if you don't get too close to it.
Interesting. Okay.
Because it's not until the substances are highly processed that they become uber dangerous.
Yeah. Well, that's good.
And there's a lot of things that we take for granted in our everyday lives that are pretty hot in the radioactive department.
Like Yorkshire.
Yes. And
apparently. And bananas.
Yes.
Supposedly. A borosilicate glass jar filled with uranium ore is mounted in front of a Geiger counter, which detects ionizing radiation emitted by the rocks. The timings of the radioactive events are mapped to a control voltage output and a number of gate/trigger outputs. These can be used to create truly random, unpredictable variations in your synth patches. I guess that's cool, even if it is a bit scary and will probably be flagged at customs if you ever decide to fly with your rig.
Where is it supposed to be coming from?
Let's see if we can find out. So, Nervous Squirrel is a dude called Dave, who enjoys making electromechanical machines and sculptures, also electronic projects.
I can't imagine he's building these in high volume.
No, I think it was a batch of 8 or something.
Okay, very specialist.
Yeah. Ah, a few years ago I moved out of my studio in an East London cemetery. So, from the UK, apparently.
And does it mention how much he's charging for these
novel devices? If you want some radiation in your patches, £495 Great British Pounds.
I'm afraid, Mr. Nervous Squirrel, I'm going to be passing on that one.
Yeah, I think it's super cool and terrifying, but there we are.
Simultaneously.
Yeah. Awesome Vaults by Nervous Squirrel.
It is quite amazing how far people are taking the Eurorack platform.
Yeah, it's wild. I think there is a module that has a box of dirt in it.
I've seen it.
Is it for something about grounding?
It was a distortion unit, and it was using the dirt as a distortion media, and there's a little window in the front which is coffin-shaped.
Yeah, that's the one.
And I spoke to the guy at one of the shows. It was in Kingston.
Oh, yeah.
Kingston-upon-Thames.
Yeah.
Some years ago. I want to say 2016, something like that. Mm. And we asked him what it was, and he described it as a distortion. And then we said, well, is that dirt? And he said, that's not only dirt, it's Jerusalem dirt.
Oh, really? Weird and wild.
Yes. I would imagine. I'm not sure if it was available for sale or it was a one-off. I didn't quite get there with him on that one.
I've certainly scrolled past it on Modular Grid a fair few times.
Yes. You know, most probably built in the similar sort of batches as the radioactive thing as well.
In more mainstream synth news, we have the Korg Op6 SE and SE Platinum, just like the wave states of last episode. The stretched versions, more keys, aftertouch apparently, more money, but very, very similar other than that.
We did wonder what was going to happen to those other two units.
They got bigganized as well, it seems. The SE at 1,899 sterling pounds of the British greatness, and 200 more if you want the platinum, it seems.
Yes.
No.
Yes, I don't see they're going to be selling a great deal of these. As I always say, with digital equipment, there's always faster processors and more memory and cheaper memory.
Yeah.
So it's not the type of thing that you can invest in and expect it to become a classic, let's put it that way.
No. Early news on this one, but it's either Isla or Isla Instruments, Caladan, is emerging in a more substantial form than the last it was teased. So what we know at the moment, 8-part multi-timbral polyphonic hybrid synthemicizer inspired by the future Sonus Parva, which is obscure, and I don't really know what that is, but it seems to be based on the idea of add-in voice cards so that it can emulate many different synthesizers. It also seems to support samples in some way. So it seems the future Sonus Parva was an analog 3-oscillator 8-voice synth with digital control, but Isla or Isla Instruments are adding in some more digital stuff. It certainly looks cool, and their sample that they did a few years ago got a good review on Alex Ball's channel. But I do remember seeing the most glorious LEDs on a prototype panel, which I will show you, Pete.
Many LEDs.
Many, many colours. Whee!
Yes, very so pretty.
It could well be very pretty, and hopefully quite usable with the prettiness. But stay tuned to Isla or Isla Instruments' social media, should you be interested in such a thing. Next, we have a new modular synth brand, AS Synthesizers, which is not a very distinctive name. They're from Hungary, and they do have a rather interesting feature. That is, you can patch them around the back to make your own normaled connections and design your own default semi-modular synth routing, which is kind of cool. If you have a modular setup that relies on a main voice or two that you want to have accessible at all times, but then be able to break out of, that could be quite useful and remove the necessity for permanent patch cable nests.
Or just buy a semi-modular.
Indeed, but the option's there if you want it. Fairly standard on all other fronts, it seems, you know, VCO, VCF, VCA, dual envelope. They do look nice, and it's a cool idea, the normal patching stuff that you can do around the back.
So pretty standard subtractive synthesis.
It doesn't seem to be earth-shattering, but looks well-made. Very nice what look like powder-coated panels.
Mm.
And quite a comprehensive MIDI CV thing. But there they are, AS Synthesizers, the Prima modules, if you want to go and have a look at them. Today on What's Behringer Done Now, they've made a 3-channel clone of the Korg SQ10. Hooray, I guess. Yeah. There's a picture of it. Will it turn up at some point? Maybe. Will it be cheap? Yes.
I note that the Pro 800s have come into stock now.
Oh, they actually have?
Yes.
Wow.
I was talking to one of my colleagues today, and I said, have you tried them yet? And he said, yeah, I've had to test a few. I said, what do they sound like? He said, thin.
Thin, yes. Is that the sort of the module with the touch panel-y calculator buttons?
Yeah, they've stuck relatively faithfully to the kind of aesthetic of the original Pro 600.
But thin and fizzy, it seems.
Yes, that's what his opinion was.
Did you ever use the original?
No.
I don't know anything about it at all.
Oh, it's sort of mid... Well, I say mid-80s. I think off the top of my head, I could be wrong, 1982, 83-ish.
Is it kind of a few generations back, but kind of the same family line of the Rev 2? It is a Dave Smith thing, isn't it?
Yeah, no, not at all. It's more like the... You had the Pro 1, which is monophonic.
Yeah.
And then the Pro 600 was the one with the polyphony. So how it relates to the Prophet 5, I don't know. I don't know whether a lot of those sequential or early sequential machines were kind of using a lot of similar circuitry.
Oh, is this the kind of a DCO thing rather than VCOs? Because if you're thinking Prophet 5, that would have been all sort of discrete stuff.
Originally, the Prophet 5 was for the Rev 1 and 2, I believe, but I think by the time they got to the Rev 3, it was Curtis chips.
Interesting.
And the Rev 4, obviously, the current re-release is Curtis chips as well.
Yeah.
It depends how discrete you mean when you get to discrete circuitry.
Yeah. Let's have a quick Google on it. The Prophet 800. It was the Prophet.
No, it's the Pro 600,
wasn't it?
The Pro 600.
They just gave it a couple of extra voices.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, I think Jeremy has one of these. So I think he might have done a demo of it in our temporary pandemic brewery modcaf spot, whatever it was. The first commercially available synth to implement MIDI, apparently. But yes, descended from the Prophet 5. 100 patch memory, two oscillators. Well, there it is. One would expect it to be rather beefy, descending from where it does.
Yeah, you'd think it'd have a bit more substance to it.
But so Behringer might have missed.
Possibly, but yeah, that was my colleague's impression of it.
Dang.
I'm sure we'll sell a number of them. Quite a few, most probably.
What's the value proposition?
I believe it's not very expensive.
369, so... That's quite tempting for a two oscillator, eight voice poly in a box.
Yes. The Behringer stuff is very popular, and especially when they bring something new out, all the fans tend to rush out and get one. I think we had loads of pre-orders. Not my cup of tea.
No. It'd be worth a listen, I think, at some point.
Certainly.
Assuming the digital corner of it holds up, because that has been a problem in the past.
Yes, well, as I say, the whole wipe clean button thing is straight from the original.
Yeah, it's all the news I can possibly find. Right, we must finish off this coddly past with our usual miscellaneous multimedia recommendation. And Pete's going to have to go first, because I don't have one yet. Fire away.
Okay, I've been getting into a bit of Geopolypedia.
A who? A what?
It's a YouTube channel.
Go on.
And I'm spelling that Geopolypedia. Basically, it features relatively short videos about various countries and their geographic characteristics, population densities, and other various facts and figures concerning their countries. Let me read you some of the titles. Why is 70% of Portugal empty?
Why indeed?
Why do 60% of Indonesians live on just one island?
Good question.
Why do 80% of Brazilians live east of this line? So you get the gist. It's about topography, populations, etc., etc. But they're short and sweet, and they're quite interesting. So that is my multimedia recommendation for this week, the YouTube channel Geopolypedia.
Quite like the thumbnails, actually. They're quite fun.
Yeah, they certainly put a bit of effort into it.
Right. I've been playing a bit of guitar recently, actually, which has been quite fun. I have been not even attempting to learn. I have been successfully learning Do Not Look Down by Meshuggah, which is angry and metally, but most interestingly has kind of a 17-beat main riff in a 4-4 tune, so it has this really cool rolling thing that doesn't quite line up, and it's wonky, but really satisfying to play. If you do not like the metally things, let's go to the complete opposite side of whatever spectrum we're talking about here. In fact, the far side of whatever, because this is The Far Side of the World by Tide Lines, who are an exceedingly Scottish band, but it's a great, fun, poppy tune. Far Side of the World by Tide Lines, if you don't like metal. If you do, Do Not Look Down by Meshuggah. Thank you so much for listening to episode 181 of Rack Addicts After Hours. We do hope you tune in once more. Not even once more, many times more. Next week, and the next week, and the next week, and the week after that. I've gone slightly loopy. I'm sorry. Farewell!